Today, we're going to start a kind of a three-week mini series on temptations of Jesus. He was tempted three times, and we're going to cover one each week. And it's in Matthew. We're going to be out of chapter 4. All the verses would be like 1 through 11, but we're just going to be doing verses 1 to 4 this morning. Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the desert to be tempted by the devil. After fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. The tempter came to him and said, "If you are the Son of God, tell these stones to become bread." Jesus answered, "It is written, man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God." Thus ends the reading of God's holy word to us today. The wilderness. The wilderness experience runs from the beginning of the Bible to the end. And two of the most well-known experiences are Israel in the Egypt of Sinai and Jesus in the wilderness of Jordan. God had acted in a powerful way to deliver the Hebrews from the hand of Pharaoh and led them into the wilderness for 40 years. And from that time on, the prophets and historians of Israel looked upon the time in the wilderness as a very special time. They had to have the wilderness. And that is because in the wilderness, they needed to learn that they had to be wedded to God, literally, spiritually wedded to God. Now, the whole Old Testament is built around this. In fact, Moses was led, who led them in that experience. He had to go into the wilderness. You remember that? He had to go himself first, where he learned the name of God and where he prepared for his ministry. And then Elijah later on, and Hosea and all the others into the wilderness. It's a dominant theme. And now Jesus is led into the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights. And what happened in the wilderness? Jesus wrestled with all of the things, dependencies that were available to him. Personal, charismatic power, economic power, political power. Depend on these. He was tempted, and one by one, he rejected. And his last word in the wilderness is, "You shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve." Later, the Apostle Paul, converted to Christ on the road to Damascus, had to go into the desert of Arabia for 3 years before he was ready for his ministry. So like I said, it is a theme that runs all the way through the scripture. And the lesson is always the same. God is the source of life. God is the one who loves us into being. And it is only when we are absolutely dependent on him that we find life. And it is in the wilderness that we seem to learn this. All right? Now, I have always been interested in this because it is a dominant biblical theme. So while I was in seminary, I had the opportunity to spend 8 days in the spring of 1980 living as a hermit in the Arizona desert. There is a small, one might say, very tiny Roman Catholic community which believes so strongly in the importance of prayer and contemplation and the wilderness experience that they live out in the desert of Arizona, 60 to 70 miles north of Phoenix, maintaining hermitages for five or six people who would like to come and live as hermits in the desert there. Now, I had some of my classmates, they went with me into this, and I had told them I really wanted the experience of the wilderness, and so prayerfully and lovingly, they gave me the full treatment. I became a little suspicious when one of their letters to me said, "Do you have any health problems that we should know about?" And I almost backed out when the letter said your hermitage has been reserved for you. I mean, the word itself is kind of a frightening thing. And the hut that I was going to was the most removed from everybody else, the most isolated, the most primitive. It is where the founder of the order liked to stay when he was in residence. So I lived for 8 days in a little wooden hut, 6 feet by 12 feet. And on rainy days, when I was trying to get exercise, pacing back and forth, it was 4 steps in one direction and 3 in the other. That's it. I slept on a board. They did put a real tiny, thin rubber foam cover over the board, but the bed was literally cement block with plywood board. That was it. And the weather was something of a problem. I mean, I had thought, well, I'm willing to go through with this, God, but I think I'm going to go in April. When it's springtime in the desert, you know, and I had visions of nice, warm Arizona desert sunshine and wildflowers and all the rest, I thought I would freeze to death. I mean it literally. I find out that this place is in the high desert in Arizona, and there's a difference. I took only a sweater and a light coat. The day we arrived, it was snowing very hard. And for 5 straight days, snow and cold rain and wind and clouds, I didn't see the Arizona sun for 5 days. And I wore several layers of clothes day and night. And on the night I was lying in bed with all these clothes on, I only had this tiny thin blanket and quilt, shivering. I mean, I couldn't sleep, I was so cold. I heard the voice of God saying to me, "I didn't bring you here for fun and games, buddy." We got up at 5:30 in the morning for morning prayer. And you come into this beautiful little chapel, and there it's in this small community, intense prayer already. At 6 p.m. we had evening prayers and then a common meal in the evening every once in a while. All Saturday night we took turns in the chapel praying for Sunday. I mean, that was a beautiful thing. I mean, think of somebody who could be here all Saturday night praying in preparation for what's to happen here on Sunday. You can imagine what that would be like, the all-night prayer vigil. And then on Sunday morning, after 5 straight days of terrible weather, the sun, oh, bright and warm and beautiful, and I remember how it nourished my soul, and we had the celebration of the Lord's Supper. It was so dignified and beautiful. Now, the food was something of a problem. I had oatmeal for breakfast every day. And your first 2 meals, you prepared yourself. There was electricity in the hermitages. You prepared them on a little, you know, hot plate. So I had oatmeal. Sometimes I had bread, hot tea. That was it. That was breakfast. Every day. And for lunch also, taken alone, you prepared it yourself. I had oatmeal or maybe soup, you know, for a change, and that was it. Then we had a common meal in the evening, occasionally, which was to give us nourishment, but they were all meatless meals. No meat for 8 days. And the first night, I remember the first night, I was so hungry, we had fried onions over rice as the course. That was it. That was dinner. I don't even mean French fries, right? That's just rice with fried. It was terrible. Anyway, that was all it was. Then the next night, how about this? We had a half-cooked bowl of kidney beans. That was supper. So again, I was discovering this was not for fun and games. I lost 5 pounds during those 8 days. And you would think, as a result of this, I would hate oatmeal. I do hate oatmeal. Matter of fact. But I really knew I was in the wilderness, however, when on one occasion I started to get in the bed and there was a lizard in the bed already ahead of me. He had obviously come in to get out of the cold. I didn't blame him. But as I debated for myself, I thought, all night? That's a little too much. It's either him or me that's got to go. So I made these careful preparations, and I opened the door, and I was going to grab him by the tail and flick him out. Well, I grabbed him by the tail, and the tail came off in my hands. Now, you desert people know that this is a common happening, and they told me it's okay, the lizard will grow a new tail. I said, well, it's okay with the lizard, but it's not okay with me. Didn't like that. So I threw the tail in a tin waste basket, and for almost 10 minutes, it thrashed around. It was an amazing thing. And as young people would say today, it really grossed me out. But the thing that really worried me and left me on ready alert all night was that even though I had the tail, I didn't have the lizard. And sure enough, the next morning, when I awoke, the lizard was in bed with me. And I knew I was a long way from Washington, and indeed in the wilderness. Now, 8 days of this kind of an experience, and I'm not talking about loneliness now. There's a difference between loneliness and solitude. I experience what I believe is the basic thrust of the whole wilderness experience. And that is to know in ways that I had never known before how God loved me. And how God is calling me into a marital union with Himself. I must know this absolute dependence on Him, this complete trustfulness, this deepening act of faith in God, and that the only way we learn this, the only way many of us learn this, is through a wilderness experience. And in our scripture lesson, Satan tempts Jesus. Tempts him 3 times, but this morning we're looking at the first. He challenges Jesus to make really a hard decision. He's been fasting in the desert. He's hungry. So the devil's first proposal is, if you're the Son of God, then tell the stone to turn into a loaf. This has to be an appealing one. Should Jesus use his power merely to satisfy his craving for food? Should he perhaps then go and do likewise for all the hungry people who've been impoverished by the Roman tax collectors? I mean, surely the overturning of social justice injustice was in harmony with the Father's will. I mean, that should be good. Economic justice, social justice, they're proper Christian concerns. Man, after all, does live by bread. But these concerns are not ends in themselves. They're only means to an end. The end of our searching and questing, our working and sweating, our laughing and crying is God. The eternal love. The works of love among our brothers and sisters point us in the direction of the eternal love. And the search for eternal love begins here and now in the discovery of love in one another. This is God's plan for salvation. God's design for the final reconciliation of humanity and divinity. But means is not to be confused with the end. And so Jesus answers, man does not live by bread alone. And when Jesus came out of the desert with God, along at the center of his being, he was prepared to carry out his ministry among the people in harmony with God's will. God and God alone belongs at the center of our being. That's probably one of the things I learned on that trip. All else in life must fit into place around the God center. If we're going to be the whole persons, alive to who we are and moving forward for fulfillment in harmony with God's will. That's why we're here. But keeping God at the center is a constant struggle. Jesus triumphed over Satan. But as the scriptures tell us, Satan departed from Jesus in the desert only to await another opportunity. Satan will not take no for an answer. So don't waste your time saying no to Satan. Rather, use your time saying yes to God.